Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Tracks as we begin our second Hickman track. We are tackling the Hickman Avengers run. We are doing it because it might have some influence on the two Avengers movies coming out. What is it, next year and the year after? Is that right, Matt?
I believe so, Bob. The timeline for me is so confusing because they keep switching when movies are coming out, and it's hard to keep up, but I just go see what comes out.
But nonetheless, for Matt's edification, for Matt's enrichment, for Matt's experience, let's talk about some Hickman Avengers comics. So we are talking about the original first trade of Hickman's run on the Avengers, which gets a little confusing because he's on Avengers and he's on New Avengers. But the New Avengers book is basically an Illuminati book. Matt, do you know who the Illuminati are in Marvel?
Doctor Strange, Iron Man, Mr. Fantastic, Professor X.
Professor X originally. In the New Avengers book, it'll be Beast, because I think Professor X is dead or off-world or something at the time of this series. The New Avengers book, Black Panther 2, Namor. The New Avengers book is an Illuminati book, and then the Avengers book is about the main Avengers thing. They are parallel, and Hickman viewed them as parallel. The goal was to have 24 issues of the regular Avengers book coming out a year versus 12 issues of the New Avengers book coming out a year. We'll trade off in our coverage, but I thought to have a running start, it just made sense for us to begin with the first two trades of the main Avengers book. Even though the first arc of the New Avengers book takes place slightly before this, I just thought it read better if we just read these two trades first.
I do appreciate that, Bob, because as I was reading this, there were some slight scenes or panels where it alluded to stuff going on in the other book. And I was fine with that because I knew you started us here, even though Hickman's crazy about going back and forth between now. He does. But as far as the parallel running to the New Avengers, this will not confuse you if you read it this way.
I think the order we're going to drop the episodes, it's not the only way to read it, but I think it's an easy way to read it if people do want to follow along. So this episode, we're talking about the first original trade of the Hickman Adjectiveless Avengers. It's Avengers World. It's issues 1-6. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. We're in Kenny Trex. And Matt, on the first three issues of this comic, we have Jerome Opeña doing the art. You liked his art on Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force, right?
He was the artist on the first arc. It was the Apocalypse Solution was the name of the arc.
Cool. It was only the first arc?
I think so, yeah. It's really dark and grounded, the actual art style, very violent. That's what drew a lot of people into that book.
It really set a tone. And definitely Remender's Uncanny X-Force, I think, is something that Hickman's thinking about and responding to in this. It was only a couple of years before this book came out. And I think, ironically, Opeña maybe only does the first three issues of this. I don't know if he's going to be back later.
But his artwork's definitely, it's grown-up art. Let's just put it that way.
It's very dark and sexy and violent.
Yes.
Well, let's just plunge right in. So the first issue is Avengers World. What goes down in Avengers World, Matt?
So, Bob, the Avengers are captured by the Ex-Nihili, who are terraforming Mars to create a perfect human race via accelerated evolution. That's Hickman for you.
Let me compliment you on your pronunciation of Ex-Nihili. I don't think I would have pronounced it that way, but whatever I'd done would have probably been wrong and sounded worse. You really got it. Good job.
Thanks, Bob. The only problem I do have is there's a character called the Ex-Nihilo. And I just go back and forth between those two. I interchange the names. So if I do that throughout the podcast, I apologize.
Listeners, so the Ex-Nihili would be Ex-Nihilo and Abyss, who are two new characters created here. And they're the ones, transforming Mars. There's also a robot thing called the Aelith. And I don't think he's technically an Ex-Nihili, but you see him a lot with Ex-Nihilo and Abyss, the Ex-Nihili, in this first issue.
So there are the Builders.
And they are the people who set the Ex-Nihili in motion, correct, as I understand.
They're from the very beginning of creation.
Indeed. And this is one of the things, this arc, it's Hickman basically bringing the DC multiverse much more affirmatively to Marvel. Now, granted, Alan Moore already did that in the 80s in Captain Britain. It's not totally new, but Hickman's handling it more of a DC way. The Builders seem to be the beings who somewhat create the universes, or at least if they don't create them, build them up and sustain them in the early stages.
And they destroy anything that's not suitable or not.
Hence the darker sides of the Ex-Nihili.
It's the people playing The Sims with their lives, guys.
And we already talked about the fact that Hickman is very consciously trying to one-up Remender's Uncanny X-Force with this, and he's a little bit trying to one-up some DC Crisis stuff. Another interesting thing he's trying to one-up is on page 2, we have him doing the origin of the universe, but it's only the Marvel universe, and he's doing it in 4 panels, only the 616 universe, and he's doing it in 4 panels just like All-Star Superman does Superman's origin in 4 panels. So I did like that Morrison can do it for Superman, but I can do it for the whole Marvel.
Well, Bob, on the very next page, you've got these panels that Hickman likes to use that have these graphic, almost organizers or designs. And they puts the different symbols for each Avengers character. Then now it has them branching off from each character. And now I have to try to figure out what does that mean. Is Thor in charge of 4 people? And why is one of them highlighted?
Thor would be in charge of these ones. Iron Man would be in charge of these ones. In theory, that I remember, in practice, that ever actually comes about in the issue. And one of the things I will say, I think you may have noticed this as it goes on, as there's, is it 18 spots?
I believe so.
Yeah. As he goes and fills out the roster, right now we got a lot of blank spots for empty spots in the roster. But it's also a cool visual because he'll have in blue text the heroes who will appear in that issue. Then he'll have, I think, in gray, the ones who don't appear. If people die, he has them in black. If they're captured, he has them in red. It becomes like an interesting thing. It's a little bit borrowed from Legion of the Superheroes in maybe the 80s, okay, where they show you who you're dealing with, a huge cast, who's going to be in this thing.
It also reminds me, too, of X-Men splitting teams between blue and yellow, having the people in charge of it. Still, maybe he was going in that direction at some point. But I'm just saying, now we're back to these graphics where I have to pay attention and try to like decipher what's going on.
This is really where we're first seeing Hickman totally unchained on the graphics. He uses them some in the FF run, but the FF run is what made him a superstar and gave him where Marvel's, we want you to produce 36 issues of Avengers a year. I'm going to work with some of the best artists. I'm going to have this pretty unique release schedule. And also, I get to do graphics in every issue, which he'll push even further when he gets X-Men. But that's one of the things I like about this, is that with this Avengers run, Hickman can more fully become himself.
It's as though, Bob, his work is evolving.
He gets more freedom, and so he could do what he probably always would have wanted to do.
As though Hickman is the ex-Nihilee, and Marvel is the builder.
Marvel is the universe, and Hickman is reshaping it as the builder.
There you go.
The other thing, I think I said this in our coverage of his FF run, but as I understand Hickman's personal interest, he was an X-Men, Spider-Man, Legion of Superheroes kid.
Oh.
He didn't like FF or the Avengers as a kid, and so he's very much had to get up to speed with both of those books, as I understand it. We'll talk about later a few things in this that very much show Hickman's actual comics interest in the 80s, if that makes sense.
You could tell he had a love for the X-Men stuff, but I feel like he has ideas for Fantastic Four and Avengers, and it takes them out, and even with X-Men too, it takes them out of their regular context and what you're used to seeing them. Because these are not the same Avengers we see in the films. You have some of the same aspects, but when you're reading them, they play completely differently, especially Thor. To me, he's not like the character you see in the movies.
It's interesting too, because he does consciously begin with the movie Avengers.
Right.
And this was coming out the year of the first Avengers movie.
Wow.
Although it's interesting because Avengers, in that sense, hadn't been Avengers for quite a long time, because Bendis had been doing an Avengers run for about 8 years, I think, at that point. Not a traditional Avengers. It's got Spider-Man and Doctor Strange and Luke Cage, Wolverine. It's a very different lineup than Avengers was when we were kids, or before that, going back to the 60s.
You had a new team. And that was always interesting to me when Wolverine and Spider-Man joined the Avengers. And in my brain, I associated it with this piece and not the Bendis piece.
This was, I think, the first Hickman stuff I read, because I was trying to read all the Marvel Now stuff.
Yeah.
I read this stuff pretty much as it was coming out, or at least as the library got the trades as it was coming out. I really dug it. I really liked the vibe of it a lot 10 years ago. And I tried to go back and read older Avengers comics at the time, because this thing established this really cool vibe. And I was like, oh man, have Avengers always been like this? This is awesome. And I go back and I read older Avengers comics and I'm like, no, Avengers have never been like this. Avengers have always been terrible. And this is the first time they're good.
Exactly. That's the thing. I don't think I've ever picked up an Avengers comic until either this run or Bendis's run.
I will say, to just, if we do have any Avengers purists out there, I haven't read the Steve Englehart stuff, and I need to read the Steve Englehart stuff. That's the guy who did Strange Apparitions on Batman. I have read some of the Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, and the Don Heck Stan Lee stuff. That stuff's not good. I've read the famous Roy Thomas stories. That's not good. I've read the famous Roger Stern stories. I think it's way overrated. I really, really dislike the 90s run that Kurt Busiek and George Perez did in the 90s that everybody loves. I think it's very bad. And then the Bendis stuff, I don't think it's awful, but it's not my taste, not my cup of tea. And so this is really some of the only Avengers stuff that I actually dig.
I could see that, because it seems a whole different spin on what I would expect out of Avengers, especially the scale.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because you would think the Earth's Mightiest Superheroes would be fighting things on this level, but I just don't see it as often. Prior to this, I didn't see them fighting other things. Because I didn't read a lot of the comics, I wasn't really sure what to expect other than what I saw in the films. So yeah, there's a whole giant history before all this. I played the video game one time, or a couple of
times. You're talking about the 90s game?
Yeah, there's a 90s video game, and they fought Whirlwind.
Ultron was in that.
Ultron was.
That 90s. Is that a Super NES game?
It was on Nintendo. I think it was on both NES and Super NES.
Okay.
The game wasn't bad, but it was literally, come on.
I remember thinking he was cool, but I remember being very confused by Vision in that. And I was also long confused, because in the 90s, Vision is all white, but in the classic Avengers, he's got that weird green and orange design.
It was just strange. That's really the only exposure I've had to the Avengers. Now, the individual characters, like Captain America, I know a lot about. All individually, I know a lot about them, but as a team, no.
That's funny. Well, I guess the other main thing I wanted to say about this, well, actually, one other thing I wanted to say that is maybe a departure, I just wanted to see if you felt this. A lot of this is just in Jerome Opeña's art. I don't necessarily think it's in Hickman's writing. I just think it's in Opeña's art. But on page 7, did you get a lot of sexual tension between Cap and Iron Man?
It's all the art. I went back and reread it after I saw it in the notes. I was like, I feel he gets the emotions pretty well.
Yeah, like, and so Cap's having a dream, a very sinister dream with Namor, Reed, Black Panther, and Black Bolt of the Inhumans. And we'll see what the origin of that is next week when we talk about New Avengers.
That's the other thing, too, reading a Hickman book. You have to remember that he will answer the questions eventually. It just may not be this issue. and you may have to go back and reread to figure out where that was mentioned in the first place.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and talk favorite panels, Matt. My favorite panel is on page 14. We get our first look at Bruce Banner gone Hulk. And I love how green he is. The colorist did a super good job. It's a really interesting and queasy sort of green in contrast to the red of the environment.
Well, it's that. And it's also the way his face is shaped. A really good job. Mm-hmm. Just like making him more monster than human. He has that Frankensteinish look in the face, which you don't always get out of Hulk.
You sometimes do, but not all the time. Then this, Matt, this I believe will be the third time I've read through this run. And I am embarrassed that I don't think I ever noticed this on the prior two reads, which is, man, I'm dumb. But on page 20, when the ex-Neely load Captain America back up into the Quinjet and send him back to Avengers Mansion, that is totally what happens to Cyclops getting sent back from Krakoa in Giant Size X-Men number 1. A very intentional reference.
Bob, this whole thing to me felt like Giant Size X-Men number 1.
Yeah, the getting whole the team book, together, whole getting book, bigger.
A direct updated version of that for Avengers.
Yeah, that makes Bendis' Avengers, the original 5 X-Men. That's an interesting disjuncture.
The Avengers that are coming onto the team are characters we've seen before, some of them, but we're also getting three newer versions of characters. So it's like that in X-Men too, because we'd already met Wolverine, we'd already met Sunfire, Banshee, but then Storm was brand new, Colossus,
Thunderbird.
And then they're all going to go to Mars, where even the way they're contained reminds me of the way they were contained on Krakoa.
Oh yeah, for sure, the original five, and Havoc or Polaris are stitched up in the island.
So when you think of this in the big picture, Bob, Hickman just has a hard-on for Giant Size X-Men.
He really does. Which, man, he will really explore in House of X and Powers of 10.
I like Giant Size X-Men number one.
You had a CD of it when we were kids, and we read detailed annotations of it in the mid-90s. Well, Matt, you said your favorite page was the splash page on page 24 that ends the issue.
Oh, yeah, the art on this is beautiful. And you see all the new Avengers with Cap holding up the shield, doing the classic Cap pose with it in there. It's a beautiful illustration. What to expect coming from these new characters in the book.
Quiz time. Who do you know on this page?
I know everybody now since I read it, but I can tell you who I knew at the time. Well, of course, I know Cannonball, Spider-Man, Captain Marvel, Spider-Woman, Falcon, Sunspot, Wolverine. And then you've got Hyperion, who I'm not very familiar with.
Did you read Squadron Supreme?
I think so.
That's Marvel's Watchmen.
There you go.
But it's using a team that occasionally showed up in the Avengers as Marvel's Justice League of America from a parallel universe, but it's telling like a deconstructionist Watchmen-like story with them. And Hyperion, obviously, is the Superman analog. Now, as a later issue in this run will make clear, this is not the Hyperion from the Squadron Supreme. This is a Hyperion from a different parallel
universe. I knew Hyperion. Now, the other, I also knew the dude who can, like, transport people from Australia. His name is
Manifold. Also in Krakoa. He's a mutant. Hickman, I believe, created him, and he first showed up in Hickman's first Marvel series, Secret Warriors. Manifold, Eden Fessy is his name. He's an aboriginal mutant with teleporting powers created for Secret Warriors. The lady in the black and white costume who's hovering, do you know who she's supposed to be?
At that time, when I was originally reading it, no, Bob.
Do you remember Captain Universe from like old back issues of the late 80s, early 90s we read?
This is going to be so weird, Bob. I remember her in an ad for Slushies.
Ah, funny.
That's all I've got. She was in some weird random ad for Marvel in the 90s, and it was for Slushies.
Yeah. So basically, I don't really understand Captain Universe either, and this is a new host for Captain Universe, but basically, Captain Universe is a godlike being who Spider-Man had Captain Universe powers for a little bit there in the early 90s. A couple other Marvel characters did, and here, Hickman's just treating her as the sentient embodiment of this universe. Great, great.
Just the sentient embodiment of the universe. No biggie. Yeah, I gotcha. But she's just really powerful. She calls herself Mother, folks. So anybody calling themselves Mother is going to be...
Does she call herself Mother, or do just other characters call her Mother?
Maybe other characters do. I don't care.
I think Shang-Chi and ex-Nihilo call her Mother.
If you're referring to someone as Mother, they're going to have some crazy powers, so... Just go with it.
Then the other new person on this page is a Smasher. This is the first time seeing a female Smasher, but the male Smasher that we've seen before is a member of the Imperial Guard for the Shi'ar. And you know how every member of the Imperial Guard is basically an analog to a member of the Legion of the Superheroes, right?
Right.
Yeah, so Smasher is the Ultra Boy analog. Do you remember Ultra Boy's gimmick?
He's Superman, right?
What's the catch? He is Superman.
He can only do one power at a time or something?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's it. She's the new version of the Legion's version of Ultra Boy.
Wow. And we will learn her origin, folks. Don't worry. They dedicate a whole issue to... they did a whole issue to most of the new characters to
come. They do. It's useful. And just to quickly recap, so we've got three characters who are first appearances because they're new versions of older characters. That's Smasher, Hyperion, Captain Universe. Neither these new versions nor the older versions, to my knowledge, had ever been on the Avengers, although older versions of Hyperion had certainly interacted with the Avengers. Manifold is a newer character, but not a new character. He's new to the Avengers. And then this is Shang-Chi, Cannonball, and Sunspot's first time on the Avengers, too.
Okay.
And then you can also kind of see, I don't know if you remember from Krakoa, but Hickman loves Cannonball and Sunspot because he loves the 1980s New Mutants series. And so him slotting in Cannonball and Sunspot is a little bit of an acknowledgement of his love of the 80s New Mutants, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, they were the wild card for him. He chose them just because he needed to throw somebody on there that he liked.
And they a little bit serve as POV characters.
The second issue, flashbacks of Tony and Steve recruiting the team are revealed as they prepare to travel to Mars for a rescue attempt. There, on pages 3 and 4, the panels that cover the origin and creation of the ex-Nihili, those are really cool. It goes into the detail, and the coloring piece is what kills me because it's black and white until they talk about the creation of the universe, and then it goes to color. I just thought that was very creative in the way that the art was used there to kind of go to the next section by adding the color.
It is interesting. It gives you a sense of how ambitious this book is, that both these issues basically begin with the creation of universes, right? Both these issues. So on page 8, Matt, they have a reference to the new universe. Do you know what that means in a Marvel context?
Not really.
In the mid-80s, Jim Shooter wanted to try and launch totally new characters at Marvel. And he did it under an imprint called The New Universe. And I've never read that stuff. And I think people don't remember it very fondly for the most part. It was an attempt to create new characters and, as the name would suggest, a whole new universe for Marvel. Two of the characters we're going to meet later in this run, or later in these batch of issues, are new versions of concepts from that publishing imprint in the 80s, The New Universe. And then I know we were never really Valiant kids, but when Shooter leaves Marvel and starts Valiant, I think some of the ideas at Valiant, especially Harbinger, are somewhat influenced by what he was trying to do with the new universe at Marvel, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I can see the idea of them trying to bring that in, but...
Yeah, there's also a Warren Ellis series that I think they tried to do something with the new universe. If I have the timeline right, a few years before this Hickman run, and Warren Ellis had a miniseries that might be interesting to look back at, although I don't remember it being particularly good, called New Universal.
Oh.
I don't know. That probably doesn't jog your memory.
No,
but that
not
might,
at all.
Yeah. But I think it wound up being like delayed and prematurely canceled, if I remember right. And then another little bit of Marvel trivia lore from this issue I wanted to flag is we basically see Luke Cage on the phone with Tony Stark and piecing Luke Cage out of Avengers after years of him being there with Bendis, which on the one hand makes me a little sad because I love Luke Cage, but on the other hand, it's not like there would have been much for Luke Cage to do in these issues.
Oh, exactly.
And
yeah.
At some point, there is a parallel Al Ewing Avengers run with the Hickman run where he uses Luke Cage pretty heavily. And that's really the only other Avengers run I would want us to look at is Al Ewing's. It's not that huge a loss, but I did think even though Hickman still has Wolverine on and Spider-Man as a legacy to the Bendis years, he doesn't have a Luke Cage on.
So, Bob, I got a question. Which Spider-Man is this?
So you remember this is Marvel Now, right?
Right.
Do you remember who was Spider-Man during Marvel?
It's not Dr. Octopus, right?
It is Dr. Octopus.
Oh.
It's Dr. Octopus in Peter's body.
So this is the superior Spider-Man.
This is the superior
Spider-Man.
Okay. Exactly.
I could tell when he legit asked Tony if they have money. I'm like, that's random. And then he's eating the other guy's.
Although
the other guy, it seemed like Parker, but not in my brain. I didn't know if it was Hickman just writing Parker in a weird way.
That is one of the things I love about Superior Spider-Man, at least in my memory, is that it is in the spectrum of behavior for Peter Parker. It's just slightly worse because Peter would need money and he would maybe steal somebody's lunch,
right.
But he wouldn't be quite such an aggro dick about it.
He would do it, but it's set up to the 10th level.
So, Matt, your favorite panel in this was the origin and creation of the Ex Nihilo. Mine was on pages 14 and 15, where Iron Man is at work and Shang-Chi is punching a ghost swordsman behind Iron Man. And then he asked Iron Man, what weapons would he ever need beyond his deadly hands of kung fu? I really dug that moment.
He'll get so, a cool weapon at some point.
Number three, the garden, Matt. What goes down in the garden?
So the next Ex Nihilo create their Atom, but are stopped when the newest Avengers show up alongside Captain Universe.
So my favorite panel on this one came early, Matt. It's on page 6, and it's when Abyss asks Thor to husband her pantheon.
My favorite panel is at the end. It's when Captain Universe destroys the Builder. Apparently Captain Universe is obsessed with Pi.
I'm going to bring up Captain Universe and Pi later. I missed that started here. I'm glad that you caught that.
Yeah.
And speaking of Giant Size X-Men number 1 and Krakoa, Matt, were you getting like real Professor X or Resurrected Mutant vibes from House of X when we have the new Atom wandering around?
Just the whole idea of the resurrection piece. You can see the blueprints for the Krakoa stuff that comes later. And I feel like we said the same thing with Fantastic Four. Hickman goes back to the same well a lot.
The resolution of this issue, right, it's that Captain Universe gives Ex Nihilo and Abyss Mars, which is straight up also what happens in Hickman's X-Men
right.
run, where the Arako mutants inherit Mars, right?
It's not a bad thing, though. I want to preface that. It's okay to go back to the same well if it's good writing.
And if it's done in an interestingly different way.
To the point where Bob and I have to have a podcast analyzing this stuff with notes to actually catch on. Because when I was reading it, I didn't catch that. But now I'm like, oh, this is... He's got the same through lines.
Thing. This is more not a deep thing. It's just funny given where Hickman will take these characters in his New Mutants comic during Krakoa. But the way Smasher and Sunspot are bantering in this comic is pretty funny given their future relationship, I'll just say.
Hinting at stuff.
Yeah. All right, Matt. Number four, Death and Resurrection of Major Titans. I should say that after the first three, we're done with Apeña, at least for now. And we've got a new artist, Adam Kubert, who's, you know, pretty famous artist too, pretty big deal. I was wondering, I don't know if you do, I'd actually read surprisingly few Adam Kubert comics when I looked at up his bibliography, but I was thinking of what my favorite Adam Kubert story might be, and I might say Batman versus Predator or Astonishing Spider-Man and Wolverine. I didn't know if you had a favorite.
He had some stuff on Wolverine, right? In the
Which I haven't really read.
I remember some of that stuff vaguely.
I thought I would have read more, but when I actually looked at it, it was like, oh, most of the things I was thinking of were his brother Andy.
Also, yeah. Did he do some Ultimate X-Men at one point, I believe?
I believe he did.
Okay, yeah, because I have that whole run.
I've not really read that run. I think you've read that run, but no, I haven't read that run.
I'm familiar with his art, but I don't want to have like a favorite, per se.
That would be one thing. It would have been interesting if I had read that, because I'm sure Hickman is also trying to one-up Mark Miller's Ultimate X-Men with this book, too. I'm sure that's another thing he's trying to one-up. Well, what goes down in issue number four, Death and Resurrection of Major Titans, Matt?
Bob, in issue number four, the Avengers investigate one of the ex-Nihilo's bioweapons that was launched into the Savage Land.
Which, man, Hickman does love the Savage Land. He does love his lush jungle and lush garden settings. I do have to say that Spider-Woman being so enthusiastic for the Savage Land really made me wish she'd hung out on Krakoa. I don't remember seeing her hang out on Krakoa, but she should have.
No, she wasn't. That is annoying. You figure she would.
Yeah, I think she's a mutant.
Yeah, she is. That's why I'm confused. Okay. I'm like 80% sure she is.
Well, the thing is, this is Jessica Drew. Maybe Jessica Drew is a mutant, or maybe Julia Carpenter is a mutant. I don't know. It's hard to keep it straight. All right. Another thing I wanted to point out, and maybe I was just in a mood when I was reading this comic, Matt, but in addition to the big gay energy from Captain America and Iron Man in the first issue, I was getting some pretty big gay energy from Thor and Hyperion in this issue.
They're two beefy dudes, Bob. Throwing hammers beefy, and stuff around, throwing
just
powers.
Beefy dudes chilling in a jungle, Matt. You're sweating, you need to take off some clothes. It's great.
Two beefy guys in the Savage Land.
Matt, do you agree with the observation that the AIM guy makes that you're better off dead than owing $200,000 in student loans?
It hit me. That's a lot in student loans, but it doesn't seem that far-fetched in today's world. So,
Especially if you're going for a doctorate in the sciences. What was your favorite panel in this issue?
Well, it was on panel 19. It was on the page 19. Captain Marvel is lifting up this AIM scientist by the collar and asking why they extracted matter from the bioweapon and injected it into a host, and because we just wanted to. And that's not the first time I've heard this, but it really defines what AIM is. They create chaos through science.
And I do think Captain Marvel doesn't do much very important in these issues, but I do think it's fun. I do think the moments Hickman does give her to shine are usually pretty well done. My favorite panel is even later. It's a 23, and we see AIM in Norway, and they've got their beekeeper outfits, but they've got the Arctic version of their beekeeper outfits.
Issue number five, Super Guardian. This is the issue I talked about earlier where we get a flashback that provides insight into Smasher's origin. But while you're learning all about this through flashbacks, she's fighting alongside the Avengers as they battle an Imperial threat. And you get to see some of our favorite characters, Bob, from the Imperial Guard.
Yeah, just to run down the characters we see and their Legion equivalents, Matt. We see Smasher, who, as we already said, is Ultra Boy. We see Oracle, who is Saturn Girl. We see Manta, who's the very obscure Legionnaire Lamprey. We see Warstar, who some people say doesn't have an equivalent, but I say is the robot version of Duo Damsel.
I remember that she could change into, she could have two different forms, right?
Well, originally she had
three. She had three. Warstar, he's just a big old robot that has like a little robot on top of him.
Yeah, but it's the same robot, though. Yeah. Bigger version and smaller version, and they split. So it's the robot Duo Damsel.
The only reason I know this is because of the action figure. I do not know this character, but the action figure had the stupid character on top of the other one.
Let's see. Then we have Gladiator, who's Superboy, which always blows my mind because I was too dumb to realize that as a kid. When I figured that out as an adult, I was like, oh, not only are all the other ones Legion equivalents, but Gladiator is Superboy. I'll be.
Mohawk gives it away.
It does. And then we've got Starbolt, who's Sunboy. We've got Mentor, who's Brainiac 5. We've got G-Type, who's Wildfire. We've got Flashfire, who's Lightning Lad. We've got Neutron, who's Starboy. And we've got Titan, who's Colossal Boy.
So just in case you're wondering, Bob's pretty passionate about making sure that everyone's aware that the Empire came first, right? The Imperial Guard came first.
Hell no.
Oh, no. Oh, that's right, Bob. The Legion came first, and Bob wants everyone to know this.
I can't believe you would say the Imperial Guard came first.
I was trying to piss you off. So the Legion, of course, came first, Bob. And Bob wants to make sure everyone knows this. So if you ever need to cite evidence, Bob's got it all.
One character in this I'd never heard of, Matt, is that our new Smasher is the granddaughter of Dan Kane, who's a Golden Age Marvel hero. His name is Captain Terror. I'd honestly never heard of him. To keep moving into issue number 6, Zen and the Art of Cosmology, what goes down in our final issue in this first trade?
So, Bob, we finally find out that the perfect human has a language, that the Atom has a language, and they find out what he wants to tell us. And keep in mind, he was created by the X-Nile. And his announcement, Bob, is that the White Event is here.
Big crisis on Infinite Earth's energy from the White Event, Matt.
Okay, when I heard White Event, all I could think about was Zero Hour.
Very much that, too. Red Skies, White Event. That's pages, true. Yeah. White Pages. So my favorite panel in this issue is 7, which picks up on a motif you identified earlier of Shang-Chi and Captain Universe are meditating. Pretty coolly drawn page by Adam Kubert, but then Shang-Chi interrupts their meditation just to whip out pie.
Just gotta have some pie. Pie's important.
So, Matt, I think Captain Universe being a black woman with a Creole name and a mysterious past is meant to be an homage to Monica Rambeau. I haven't read that much Roger Stern's 1980s Avengers, but I know Monica Rambeau as Captain Marvel factors pretty heavily into it. I've pretty much just read the famous story Under Siege that everybody thinks is great and I did not think was great. But yeah, I just wanted to identify that as probably something that's going on here as an intertext.
I did get Monica Rambeau vibes from this, especially after watching Black Widow. If you look at what Monica Rambeau becomes with her power set, it's similar to what you see here with Captain Universe.
Yeah, scaled up a lot.
My favorite panel, Bob, was on page 14. It was a Spider-Man just being a complete ass.
I don't know if Hickman or anybody else has paid this off, but I would love that if years later we saw Cannonball and Sunspot be angry with Peter or Miles, and then them just be utterly confused about, what do you mean I stole your lunch?
And that's what's so cool about this, Bob, because that could happen. It's because only we... when I read this the first time, Bob, I didn't realize that was Dr. Octopus, and I kept saying, Spider-Man's dialogue is weird here. And then now that you've let me know that, I even Googled to see who it was, because I could not, it didn't tell me.
Google, you mean the Google AI was wrong, man?
Google AI failed me miserably, Bob.
No.
Going back, realizing it was Doc Ock the whole time.
Nice, nice. One other motif that we're getting in these issues that I just wanted to flag before we go into a little bit of a larger discussion. Shang-Chi keeps interrupting Iron Man's work, which I appreciate, because as we all know, Tony Stark isn't up to anything good. And so it's good that Shang-Chi keep distracting him.
True.
Issues of Hickman Avengers do you have?
Well, Bob, we read Hickman with Fantastic Four, and we have that coverage on our podcast. I've read Hickman with Krakoa, and while we did not cover that as much, I will say that this is hard to decipher sometimes as the Krakoa stuff, which is not a bad thing. You just really have to put on your thinking cap when you're reading this. And you have got to get yourself in the mindset of this is not going to be told in the traditional, especially when it comes to time, it's not going to be told the traditional way. You're going to be going between the past, present, future, page to page sometimes. And you've got to be able to keep up with that pace. There's so many characters. He tries to limit it at the beginning of the issue by showing you who's going to be in it and who's not. But there's still a lot of characters to keep up with. So you really, if you're going to go into this, keep in mind, this is not the easiest thing to read before bed. This is one of those things you really like. You've got to kind of pay attention as you're reading. But it's enjoyable. And it is rewarding because as you start to connect the pieces of what's going on and connect the dots, it really engages you. It makes you want to continue reading his work. That's good writing. And that's what it is. This isn't your basic pick up the issue, pick up a random issue here, read it and figure it out. No, if you picked up one of these issues out of context, you're not going to have a clue what's going on.
Well, and there's a paradox in it, because I think if you're going to read this for the first time, listener, I think reading the Hickman run over a month would be about the right move, whereas we're going to have to space it out quite a bit more than that, although we are going, and in part we need to do that just because it's not a manageable number of issues for us to easily talk about on the podcast. And in part, we need to do that to actually, at some levels on the run, we want to go into some detail, right? So we have to break it up. But we will try to speed it up in some places. Like, I think there's two crossovers, Infinity and Time Runs Out, that are sub-crossovers. We're just going to blaze through those all at once and not even try to do the issue-by-issue coverage for them. Just talk about them overall to get ahead of this thing.
The similarities and differences between this X-Men... And like I said before, it's an evolution. It started with, correct?
Secret Wars before FF, then Avengers and X-Men. And it does seem to be, yeah, in some ways, escalating levels of complication.
Right.
Yeah.
So by the time you get to Krakoa and X-Men, folks, you're full-blown.
And FF is just naturally a little more manageable just because of the smaller cast, right?
True. And another question I have to ask you too, Bob, before we wrap this up. Are there tie-ins to this? You mentioned a couple of things, but are there any huge tie-in issues or smaller side events that take place that we're going to have to read?
Not anywhere near the degree of X-Men Krakoa. So, because part of the reason X-Men is so complicated, it's not the only reason. Part of the reason it's Hickman is almost like editor for a whole line of books.
Right.
And there's more tie-ins and side stuff than for FF, but not anywhere near for X-Men. There is a spinoff series called Avengers World that Hickman for a while is co-writing with Nick Spencer, and then Nick Spencer takes over. I think we should just look at that all in one go, not really do issue-by-issue right. coverage, and just kind of talk about what we like from it. And then there's two crossover events. Infinity is coming up very soon, dear listeners. We're going to record two more episodes, one on Avengers Volume 2, one on New Avengers, and then we will be in Infinity. Most of the Infinity stuff in one episode and not do issue-by-issue breakdown of it. And then there's a pre-crossover to Secret Wars called Time Runs Out, which is also, it's just Avengers and New Avengers trading off. But I think we'll just talk about that in one go. Infinity is just Avengers, and then there's an Infinity miniseries. And then Secret Wars has a ton of tie-ins, but the way it's designed is you don't need to read the tie-ins. You can just read the main Secret Wars miniseries and get the
story. Okay, good. So it's not as convoluted as his X-Men stuff, as far as trying to figure out what you have to read, what you don't have to read, what actually fits. Hickman's FF run was a little more straightforward, especially considering what was running parallel was something completely different.
Well, and to give you a little teaser, Matt, one of the reasons I wanted to do this was not just to get you prepped for the Avengers movies, but Secret War, in a weird way, it is the capstone to this run. It is the finish of this run. But it's also in some ways more of a finish to Hickman's FF run, or a sequel to Hickman's FF run. But it's one of those where I feel like you do need to read this to get to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I have an idea of what direction that's going to go in, because I know that Reed plays a pretty big piece in
Franklin. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I just think that's kind of amusing that, you know, after having done like 20 episodes covering Hickman's FF and Avengers, we'll get to a sort of climax. And then we'll also have to look forward to, he finished the Aliens versus Avengers crossover, which you could see somewhat as an epilogue to this and Fantastic Four and his X-Men run, which I found very, very fun.
All right, Bob. So next up, we're going to be looking at Volume 2, correct?
Yeah, Avengers, The Last White Event, Volume 2, which is the original trade. And then next week, we'll be back with the first volume of New Avengers.
All right.
Well, thanks for listening, dear listeners. This is Bob in Cascadia, Matt in the Southland. We are Uncanny Treks. Hope you have a good night.
Thanks for listening.